This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The wicked ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Astronauts to the moon.
Ten, nine, ignition sequence start. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
Not to get off track here, but I feel like we're in the Truman Show and we're in a snow globe and they just shook it up.
Welcome to reality.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and children of all ages. You're tuned in to your protection from deception right here on truthfrequencyradio.com. And raise the roof or holler or make some noise, whatever you do when you finally found it. Eureka! Eureka! Because you're listening to the number one show on Truth Frequency Radio on Monday nights from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific and 9 to midnight Eastern. And that show is Jaronism Monday Night Raw, and it starts now. I'm your host, Jaron from Jaronism, and with me, thankfully, and sometimes I don't know why, the rhyme to my reason, the beauty to my beast, live in studio, Missa, amazing. Missa, how are you?
Fine. I think it was really funny when you went to dinner with Corey, and you guys had fortune cookies.
Yeah.
And tell the little story
of that. Yeah, I took my son to, he likes, what's that place called?
Panda Express.
And they gave us a fortune cookie, and I opened it up and told my mom to read it. I said, here, read this for me. And she read it. She says, oh, it says you have a person very close to you that's a great admirer of yours. I'm like, oh, great. Who, Missa? That's it?
Yeah,
like,
oh, great.
Oh, great.
My wife? I do admire you. I guess you wanted someone you didn't know.
Well, I kind of already knew that one. That's not much of a fortune.
Yeah.
But to me,
you could have pretended like you didn't know, like, oh my gosh, she admires me.
I could have. Now, joining us this evening, and he'll be on here shortly in the next 10 minutes or so, is one of the all-time great researchers of our time, someone I look up to very much, someone who has forgotten, I guarantee it, more than I know. And he is Jordan Maxwell, so he'll be here momentarily. And I wanted to remind people to check out Jordan's site, which you can find at jordanmaxwellshow.com. Be careful, there are some imposter sites out there. So the real Jordan Maxwell site is jordanmaxwellshow.com. And for $30, you can join his research group. And it's just a $30 one-time payment. It lasts a lifetime, and it allows Jordan to release all of his work. And he did talk about it. If you didn't know, he was on our show 2 weeks ago, and he spoke on the fact that basically, he told the story about why he can get away with releasing some of the things that even he's afraid to talk about, that he's afraid to say, or not afraid to say, but just some of the darker things.
Careful
and just
to say.
Yeah. So he just, by releasing it and making it a private thing like that where people are paying, they are asking for that information, and that way he can just upload all of his research on there. And I think that, you know, $30 for all of Jordan Maxwell's, what, 50-plus years of research is well worth it. We joined it, and there's, I try to make sure I go there at least once a week, and there's just more than you could ever get to. I mean, there's lots of PDF books and documents and stories and interview. I mean, there's just so much you could never get through it all. So it's definitely worth the investment, in my opinion. But then again, if not, then you don't have to. That's the great thing about sites like that, or like us, or like, you know, Truth Frequency Radio is free to listen to live at any time, just like all my videos on YouTube are free at any time. And then sometimes we hope that people do support us or donate, because that's the only way we're able to do things like this. So I'm sure it's the same for Jordan. So was there any interesting news you said in NASA today you want to talk about?
Really nothing of really significance, other than I guess Trump talked to some people in the ISS and he was all excited about – not excited.
Boy.
He was actually pushing them, saying, like, you better get to Mars in my first term, pronto.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing. But
you better get to Mars, yeah.
I don't know how anybody can watch people floating in the ISS and think that that's actually happening.
Imagine that no one's gone further than 400, even if you believe in the moon landings. Yeah. Let's go with that. Now, no one's gone further than 400 miles in over 45 years. And yet now we're talking about going, it's close to 400 miles. It's just about 50 million more. So it's close. It's right on the premises.
It'd be like the first person going to Hawaii ever, stepping foot on Hawaii. And then maybe six people went, or there were people only went six more times after that. And then 50 years later, people have yet to go back.
Yeah.
I mean, you would question whether or not that place exists, really.
Absolutely. And why not, right? Mm-hmm. So other interesting news. You said that, you talked to the person on the ISS.
Mm-hmm.
Great, fantastic.
Yeah, it was really kind of a boring day. Oh, they did show a picture of supposedly the Earth. NASA showed a picture of the Earth from 870 million miles away.
Oh, I saw it, the one from Cassini.
That was ridiculous.
Hilarious. And if you guys want to join us on Wednesday, and I believe it's 10:30 a.m. Pacific time. Actually, it will be 10 a.m. is the time I'm going to jump on. I do believe Morgyle and Bob, my co-hosts from Globebusters, will be on with me. And we're going to be watching live as the ISS for the first time streams 4K footage, I believe, of the Earth from space.
First time ever? How long has 4K footage been around?
I don't know. I have no idea. Probably 5 years.
Okay.
It's just funny that all these things come out after people start, you know, talking about the flat Earth. So it will be interesting to see. If you didn't have a chance to look at the recent SpaceX launch that they did for the first time in 360, it is quite hilarious. Mm-hmm. Match that up with the sideways view. To me, it's simply a magic show, mm-hmm. And you get the people who will come at you and say, yeah, but it's all filmed. It's all on camera, so therefore we know it's real. Yet when you see David Copperfield make the Statue of Liberty disappear, even though somebody's right there with a video camera, mm-hmm. you are able to process that and say, that's a magic trick, that mm-hmm. this is not reality. Now, they've just decided to launch rockets up in the sky, and then they disappear from your sight, and they tell you, okay, now look at this feed, and it's a picture of blackness and stuff, mm-hmm. and they say that's space. So you can believe that, but again, with something so obvious as spaceflight, you would think that there'd be much more proof.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I look at it.
Oh, and
so,
the other thing we can touch on really quick, too, is the Neil deGrasse Tyson video. Did you guys talk about that on Globebusters?
Oh, God, we played it and people almost threw up. Maybe we should play it real quick.
We should play it. Let's play it, because it really reveals the underlying the absolute religion of science.
I've already thrown up watching it three times, so this is going to be tough to watch it again.
It makes me feel kind of shaky inside right now thinking about it.
It is frustrating. So we'll listen to that because it's only a four-minute video.
People don't understand how
this is
much
what they've
more
become.
Of a religion science has become than the religion that science was created to avoid.
I've never heard a priest tell me, Jesus Christ is the truth whether you believe in it or not.
Right.
Not like that. So we'll listen to this he calls it Science in America, if you want to look it up.
Yeah.
It is only
tell you that science is a religion, I don't know what.
4 minutes. Yeah, tell me if this is a religious belief or if this is what science is supposed to be. Remember the science we were all taught, right? It's the scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
It is all the things that we were told science was, and we got to
go
a certain
out and
point.
Test things and then bring results and then come to a conclusion.
And science isn't about dictating what the truth is, because it's always getting closer to the truth. So at no time does science ever say, this is the truth,
mm-hmm.
because that's the opposite of science. Then you've given up looking further.
Yeah.
So let's listen in.
Yeah.
Maybe I should click this button first.
Maybe you should press play. Maybe check the chat, see if people would hear it. They can hear it.
How did America rise up from a backwoods country to be one of the greatest nations the world has ever known? We pioneered industries. And all of this required the greatest innovations in science and technology in the world. And so science is a fundamental part of the country that we are. But in this, the 21st century, when it comes time to make decisions about science, it seems to me people have lost the ability to judge what is true and what is not, what is reliable, what is not reliable, what should you believe, what should you not believe. And when you have people who don't know much about science, standing in denial of it and rising to power, that is a recipe for the complete dismantling of our informed democracy.
Let us demand that educators around America teach evolution not as fact, but as theory.
An increasing number of parents showing skepticism about vaccinations.
Voters have approved a ban on GMOs.
They call climate change unproven science.
That's not the country I remember growing up in. Not that we didn't have challenges. I'm old enough to remember the 60s and the 70s. We've got a hot war and a cold war, civil rights movement, and all this was going on. But I don't remember any time where people were standing in denial of what science was. One of the great things about science is that it is an entire exercise in finding what is true. The hypothesis, you test it, I get a result. A rival of mine double checks it because they think I might be wrong. They perform an even better experiment than I did, and they find out, hey, this experiment matches. Oh my gosh, we're onto something here. And out of this rises a new emergent truth. It does it better than anything else we have ever come up with as human beings. This is science. It's not something to toy with. It's not something to say, I choose not to believe equals MC squared. You don't have that option. When you have an established scientific emergent truth, it is true whether or not you believe in it. And the sooner you understand that, the faster we can get on with the political conversations about how to solve the problems that face us. So once you understand that humans are warming the planet, you can then have a political conversation about that. You can say, well, should we? Are there carbon credits? Do we do this? Do we put a tariff on? Do we fund? Do we subsidize? Those have political answers. And every minute one is in denial, you are delaying the political solution that should have been established years ago. As a voter, as a citizen, scientific issues will come before you. And isn't it worth it to say, all right, let me at least become scientifically literate so that I can think about these issues and act intelligently upon them? Recognize what science is and allow it to be what it can and should be in the service of civilization. It's in our hands.
Pretty exciting, isn't it?
Oh, boy. If only peer review was called rival review, then things would be a lot different.
Yeah, if only the entire industry wasn't supported by tax dollars and wasn't supported by government agencies. There is no money in science. There's simply no money there. So you have to appeal to the political agenda, which is why you push, you know, global warming, which is why you push vaccines are okay. Again, I'll say it a million times over, folks. It's your children. You know, you should be able to choose what you do with your children and what you don't. When it comes to vaccines, all I'm saying is look at every single company. And when I say every single, I mean every single company that has made vaccines. You can find documents or you can find court papers where they have stood in court and admitted to fraud. Okay, they've admitted to deception in a court of law, standing in front of a judge and a jury. So at that point, why would you trust scientists and political people who are telling you that they're fine, everything's okay? Well, yeah, but I just heard that same company that makes them stand in court and say that they purposely deceived. Because the problem is, when profits are concerned, sometimes people, most times when you're talking up that high, most times people don't care anymore about the human being across the way, across their town, across the country, across the world. Because what they care about is that almighty dollar, that paper god. And, you know, that's what they go towards. So it's just, that's the kind of thing that makes me sick is, and to say that science is true, whether you believe in it or not. And again, remember, their whole big claim to fame is this whole Galileo issue, where, or you know, even Copernicus, right? Where there was a current going scientific truth. Ptolemy was the one that, you know, spoke about it, and they had this current going truth. And then Copernicus came and gave this new idea, and everybody just turned their back on it. Galileo got house arrested. Well, and then it came out, supposedly, that it's true, right? So then they all celebrate this big thing about how he cared about science, but now they're saying that they found the truth and that's it. Well, what if they would have done the same thing back then and just said, no, we don't allow anything else. This is the truth. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, is you need to be open to all possibilities and let something be proven to you. Again, that was Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's a PhD in astrophysics, yet he's never been to space. Mm-hmm. He's never touched space. He'll never be in space because there's only one group of people. So happens to be that they are very heavy in the occult. They happen to be Freemasonic or, you know, Masons.
Military.
Or military under gag orders. And you know, that one group is responsible for all of space travel. And if you think, well, oh, what about SpaceX? They're private. Again, you can go to my videos and you'll see where he's sitting in front of Congress and he says...
Elon Musk.
And he says, we've already given access to 300 government officials, full backroom access to our computer systems. Mm-hmm. Well, that should be a problem. This is not a private company. You're not private when you've given the government access, 300 members, to the back room of your computer system. It'd be very easy to manipulate data at that point. And again, I'll just put this out there for people researching. Look into Claude Shannon. Look into Vannevar Bush. Look into the starting of the National Science Foundation. Yep. Look at the time period and think of how easy it would be to program space into a computer. Space becomes a computer simulation. It's all done by math. You can't disprove it. What that means is that whether or not I think Saturn is real, whether I think that Mars is a place we can go, the only way I can ever disprove it is by going there with a tape measure and saying, nope, sorry, you were wrong about the you know, the diameter of this planet. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a self, they call it a self-correcting code. Then look into, what's that doctor's name? I can't remember his name right now. The guy who found the computer code at bottom of the equations, he dug through all the way to the bottom of the equations that make up the universe and found zeros and ones. Well, of course, we know that zeros and ones are found at the base of our computer operations, mm-hmm. and that is a human construct. Mm-hmm. He is going around now and telling people that we live in a matrix. And this is an astrophysicist. He's, you know, a good friend of Neil deGrasse.
James Gates?
Yeah, Dr. James Gates. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And he's going around speaking right now saying that we all live in the matrix or a computer simulation. But what he's missing is we don't live in we're not made up of zeros and ones, but what he found is that the base of the equations for the universe, it's made up of zero and ones. So a lot of research coming out on that. It's going to take a while to get there because
they constructed.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, you know, would this come out within 100 or 200 years? Yeah, probably, because people would catch on to the fact that nobody's going there. Mm-hmm. Nobody is going on these trips with, Virgin Galactic, or you name it.
Right.
Nobody's going. And eventually people would catch on to the fact of, hey, you keep saying that people are going to be taken to the edge of space and that we're going to get to go up there, and you've only been 400 miles in the past 45 years. And eventually it would come out. Mm-hmm. But they're going to keep holding on as long as they can, because as long as you think that there's somewhere to go and that they're out there exploring it, mm-hmm. you are happy in your prison.
Yeah.
And, you know, talk about like Alex Jones, prison planet, right?
If you go look at the... Kickstarters. Type in the search in Kickstarter for space or whatever, like space related projects.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one that was in the past has not been fulfilled. That you should see the comments where people are like,
but they get funded.
They get funded.
They get funded.
Millions sometimes.
Yeah.
Millions. And the people who have donated in their comments, they're livid.
Yep.
Some of them are like, oh, well, I hope that one day we'll be able to do this project. You know, some people are too nice. But, I mean, none of these projects ever come to fruition, but the money gets given to them. But then they disappear.
Yep.
Go to Kickstarter and look it up.
I've read articles. Remember the article I read that a couple years back, the company Axe deodorant spray or whatever had some competition and gave away 8 trips to space. And these 8 different people from, or maybe it was 22, because I think it was 22 different countries, and each person, one from each country, won.
Yeah.
And that was like 5-6 years ago, so I went looking up as much as I could and found out none of them, of course we know that, didn't go, and the company is now defunct. Not Axe, but the one that was Space Corps or somebody, whoever
yeah,
it was,
yeah.
has gone out of business. So, I mean, these are the kind of things that should be clues to you as a thinking individual,
recognizing patterns,
to just say, is there a possible deception here? And this deception could be would be the biggest one of all, because it would be the way that they've trapped us all, the way that they keep us confused about who we are, what we're doing here. And I want to ask Jordan just a couple questions when he comes on here momentarily about if there's anything in his research, 50 plus years, that he's come across that would maybe match or fit, or let me see if he's on the line. Jordan, are you with us? I don't know if he's on yet.
Yes, I am.
All right, Jordan, Yay. Thanks for joining us. Glad you're here. That was weird. I just wanted to ask you real quick. I don't know if you were listening, but in your research, and we know how much time and effort you put into it, have you come across anything that was interesting or rings a bell as far as the idea of space being maybe a fabrication or a Freemasonic enterprise or a cult sacrifice kind of homage to the god Apollo and, you know, things like that? I'm just wondering if your research has come across any of that or anything that rings a bell.
Well, that's a pretty heady subject, of course, and I'm just giving you my opinion. I would not be a bit surprised, because I've heard so many stories over the years from people who are on the inside of the industrial military complex talking about all kinds of extraordinary stuff that they are into and can do and they know how to do. And so it wouldn't surprise me if there's some kind of a matrix. I mean, I even did a video many years ago called Matrix of Power. So I'm well aware that the world is far, far more evolved than we think it is. And so I don't know that kind of science that well, to speak with authority, but I do know that the world is far stranger than anything, not only that you, like that one astronomer comment that I like, he said, the universe is not only stranger than you imagine, it's stranger than you can imagine. And so I know that that's true, because I've seen too much with my own eyes. I've been places that are just astounding to wake up to find out what humans are capable of really doing, as opposed to our normal everyday life and what we think we humans are up to. No, there's a lot more going on in this world that you've never been told. And so, again, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if there's some kind of a high form of technology, which we would refer to it as a magical. You know, it's not magical, it's just high technology. And
I've heard people talk about recently, there's a guy that's been out there talking, his name's Infinite Planes Society. But there's a lot of people talking about the possibility that what we've been told are aliens. So these either highly evolved or earlier evolved species could also be just all a part of the same thing we're a part of. So imagine, rather than a ball and these crazy aliens are coming from light years away in their spacecraft or whatever, that basically what we're dealing with is beings that are further evolved and have been here longer, and that they live on the outskirts. They live out where we don't think exists, because we've been given longitude and latitude and told, here's your compass and here's where you stay. And it could be possible, it's, you know, very easily conceivable that there is further land in areas that we know not to go, because we're restricted to a compass and to traveling within the longitude latitude. But that's what I've heard, that these could be just they could live far away, but they've learned to travel here and leave, and they maybe are in communication with government. You know, all these talks of the reptilians and the talks of...
It could even be underground.
Yeah, there's a lot of different possibilities, and I certainly know for a fact that we're not being told the truth. Everybody knows that. So that's why I'm definitely open to the idea. And, yeah, the more I've looked into the whole concept of space travel, it certainly seems like there's something amuck there, something amiss, that we're not being told about space travel. And I mean, just the thought of those rockets that you see taking off, that we're told those go 17,500 miles per hour to get out of the atmosphere. And just to conceive 17,500 miles per hour, a bullet goes at maximum 2,000 miles per hour. Okay, that's a bullet, and that travels, if you shoot it in a second, it will go, I forget,
2,000 miles?
No, 2,000 feet. No, in an hour, yeah. Oh. No, but it goes in a second, it goes about, I think it's 6 football fields,
okay,
which is even hard to conceive, to think that you shoot a gun and within a second it's gone 6 football fields. The rockets, which are much larger, put people inside of them, put a ton of metal, those go 85 football fields in a second. 85 football. That to me is and again, it doesn't mean, because I don't believe it, that it's not true, but to me, something cannot travel that fast with people in it and survive. And we know that even the high-end military planes that are way up in the atmosphere, that they can't even go close to 2,000 per hour, because they will split. The whole craft will disintegrate, will leak all the fuel and everything. So, but with Jordan, what we want to talk about today, and we're going to go to break, and when we get back, we want to get into some heavy topics. We want to talk mostly about the New Testament. And when we'll come back, I know Jordan and I will discuss just kind of our personal feelings about Christianity to start, because I think sometimes both of us, I've seen him attacked and me attacked as Satanists or Freemasons. You
Antichrist.
Name it. Antichrist. Did you get called that one, Jordan, ever?
Well, yeah, we could talk about anything you want, but you know, the subjects you've just been bringing up about space flight, et cetera, I have some other thoughts along that before we get into the theology.
Okay, we'll be right back, guys. You're listening to Jared's Monday Night Raw. See you in 2.
Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Jarenism Monday Night Raw. We're live. I'm Jaren.
I'm Musa.
And we are your number one radio hosts on TruthFrequencyRadio.com on Monday nights from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 12 Eastern. And with us is Jordan Maxwell. And before the break, I was ranting on space travel and the possibility that it could be part of the foundational deception that has us all so confused. And Jordan, you were saying that you had some thoughts on that?
Yes, actually, that's a very big subject, and I think very important right now at this particular point in our lifetime and in our country's existence. I think something very, very big is going on in relation to outer space, to other worlds. I know that there is something very serious is going on. but the whole subject of space travel and what's possible and what isn't, it opens up a big can of worms, because I've been on so many radio shows and I talk about different things. Have I been on your show where I talked about the theogony of Hesiod?
No.
Okay. There's a very old book that goes all the way back to the Grecian Empire, way before Rome. And there was a man who wrote a book in the ancient world, and it has become known. It's still available today in bookstores. It's still very, very important book. It's called The Theogony of Hesiod. Theogony is T-H-E-O-G-O-M-Y. The Theogony of Hesiod, H-E-S-I-O-D. Here's the Earth was supposedly around 700 BC. He was supposed to have been an illiterate herdsman in the ancient Greek world, and he said that, and he wrote that one night while tending his the flock in, out in the open, three angels came to him, and he said they didn't walk up to him, they floated up to him, and they were glowing, so he could see them coming. And when they got to him, they telepathically talked to him, and they said that they were muses. They represented themselves not as angels, but as muses, spelled M-U-S-E-S. And these three muses are three angels. Incidentally, that's where we get the word museum and music and amusement is from muses. Well, these three muses are angels, talked with Hesiod, and they told him telepathically that they wanted him to write a book about our solar system and our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, and to write a book about the gods out there in space and who they are and, you know, the general pecking order of power in our galaxy. And they would give him the information and he would write it into a book. Well, he told them in the book, Theogony of Hesiod, goes on to tell us that he told them that he could not read or write. And they said it was all right. They knew that, but they were going to channel through him. And they would give him the words and they would help him write it down. But the most important thing is that these three floating, glowing angels called muses were going to direct him and tell him all the ancient secrets of the gods in the heavens. And so they said that our Milky Way galaxy is divided into different sections, and the particular section in which our solar system is located, that there is a particular god who has been appointed to be over our section of the galaxy. The little, you know, galaxies are so incredibly large. But in our particular little section of the Milky Way galaxy, there is a god that is over us. And they said his name was Zeus, Z-E-U-S. And they said that Zeus lived on a floating city, a city that's floating. And it was in the constellation of Cassiopeia. The constellation of Cassiopeia is where Zeus lives, on a floating city. And they said that if Zeus were to walk out, they told him, if Zeus were to walk out on his front porch and drop an anvil, meaning anything heavy, drop an anvil, it would take 9 days and 9 nights and so many hours and so many minutes before it would hit the earth. And so that's how far Zeus was from us. Well, it doesn't take an astronaut to figure out that and do it with a computer. How fast does a thing fall, and then give it 9 days and nine nights and so many hours. And so it's calculated to be over a little over 3 million miles from here. And so according to the muses, according to the angels, Zeus, the god over the earth, is about 300 million miles, a little over 300 million miles from here in a constellation we call Cassiopeia. And so it was easy to, as I said, easy to calculate the distance. And so back in 1930, there was an American astronomer named Carl Jansky, spelled K-A-R-L, Jansky, J-A-N-S-K-Y. Carl Jansky built the first radio telescope. And he won a Nobel Prize and became known as the father of modern radio telescopes. Then he, Carl Jansky, also built later a radio transmitter to beam signals out into the heavens. And so in about 1930s, somewhere in the early 1930s, just to see what would happen, he transmitted a signal out to Cassiopeia, I guess because he had probably read the Theogony and was interested that the god over our earth lived in Cassiopeia. So he sent out a signal. It was at 14.3 megacycles. And he got back an intelligent signal that was amplified. But he didn't know what it meant because he couldn't understand the terms and the word. But it was an intelligent signal sent back from Cassiopeia, and it was amplified. It came in very clear understanding that there was an intelligent signal coming back from Cassiopeia. And so later on, when Karl Jansky died, he took a lot of notes on this and I guess was talking about it to other scientists. So it became known pretty much in the scientific circles that what Karl Jansky was doing and what he had done. So when he passed away, all of his notes, it is said in reference books on Karl, it said that immediately after he died, his office was ransacked by men wearing black suits. And that should tell you something. And they took everything of any importance from his office. Now, in mid-1940s, a Scottish astronomer named Duncan Lunan, L-U-N-A-N, excuse me, 1940s Scottish astronomer named Duncan Lunan was working with Karl Jansky's radio transmitter. And he, too, decided to send out a signal aimed at Cassiopeia just to see what would happen. And he, too, got back about 20 seconds later, both an intelligent and amplified signal, but he didn't know how to understand it or read it. But it was intelligent, amplified, and it was coming from Cassiopeia. Now, of course, the government's not telling you that today. And scientists and the astronomers will probably don't know anything about this because they're paid to know what they're not supposed to talk about. So, but this was actually history. And so he didn't know what to make of it. This is the Scottish astronomer Duncan Lunan. So Lunan narrowed the signal down to a particular light or a star in Cassiopeia. And he was getting back intelligent messages. And so it became known, that particular star became known as the Lunan object, L-U-N-A-N object, the Lunan object. And so you can look it up in the science literature, the Lunan object, and it will tell you this is where intelligent signals were coming back from Cassiopeia, just as Hesiod had written back in the ancient Grecian Empire.
Here's the thing that I look at that and see. There's a couple things you said that were interesting. Number one, the fact that the signal coming back was clear. That's interesting because it would not be. Cassiopeia is 66 quadrillion miles from the Earth, and you would not have a clear signal. The other thing, it being a 20-second return transmission, that sounds like, again, what I'm saying is that somebody is playing a trick. The oldest book that we can get to, the oldest book we can verify, is 10th or 11th century, 1,000 years old. So I get weary when I hear things like this Hesiod story, because if somebody wanted to deceive us, what a great way to do it by saying, hey, there's this book that was written long ago, and this guy did these things, and he's confirming our understanding of Cassiopeia today. He's confirming that in the ancient days. And I always look at those and say, well, you know, some of these things seem interesting. Like, why did it take 20 seconds for the signal to get back? The speed of light does not allow you to go 66 quadrillion miles and back in 20 seconds. That's, mm-hmm. you know, impossible. But I think that there's actually patents that NASA has for faking satellite signals, making them appear to come from certain places in space. So, you know, that's interesting. I would love to read that book, though. I think I have read it. Is that the one where it talks about Mount Olympus or no?
Yes. I think that was one of the parts to the story. I read that a long time ago, but I thought, and then just jotted down some notes while I was listening to you. And I just think it's very interesting. But what you said is true, because we know that history, Alexander the Great said, history is a bunch of lies we've all agreed upon. So, you know, and we know about the changing of history and the changing of dates, going back into the late Middle Ages, even back to the 1500s, 1600s, they were changing all the history of the world for a new agenda that was being pushed by the church and by the Jesuits. Yep. So I totally understand what you're saying, and it doesn't bother me at all that I have or that you have questions about it. I do too. I just thought this was an interesting story.
At all,
for me too. I think to me, when I hear that your whole story, Jordan, I think the stars are close and they actually are emitting some sort of frequency, which is why I think like astrology or like astral projection or whatever sort of has some.
Oh, it definitely has some merit.
I think that to me, it shows me that the stars are close and they mean something.
And the way that science pushes it away and says astrology is garbage, it's nonsense, when really, I mean, things that are nonsense do not hang around for hundreds of years. You know, I mean,
that's
there's
true.
Reason that the people still have their birth charts read and that they match so perfectly.
Now, there's some that are bunk, but there's a basis of. There's some truth in it.
There is some truth in it. So that's what we're trying to find. And the other
let me throw this into this whole conversation. I have a person I haven't seen him in a long time, but there was a person in my life many years ago who had the gift. Everybody has gifts, and this particular person had the gift of telling the future. But what he would do, and he did it with me many times, and he would do it with other people that I was in the company at the time. He would give you a prophecy about you that was in minute detail. He would give you the day, the date of the day, the time of day, where you would be and what you would be wearing, what the other people around you would be wearing, and where you would be, at what corner in the city, and what that person is going to say to you, and what you're going to say to them, and then you're also going to see this and that, and it will be at 3:45, this will happen, and that will happen. And he would go on and on in minute detail. And then, you know, a year and a half later, that's exactly what happened on that precise day at that precise time. And so I saw that with my own eyes. I experienced it myself. And so when I tell other people about this, most people will ask the wrong questions, and therefore you're missing everything if you ask the wrong question. Most people would say, well, how in the world does he do that? My point is I don't care how he does it. It's not important. What is important is that he can do it. And if he can do it and it works every time, then what does that tell you about your life? What does that tell you about your life, that you think you are free to do anything you want and be who you are? If somebody can tell you a year ahead of time with minute detail what you are going to say and what somebody else is going to answer, and what you are going to be wearing, and what color, and where you're going to be, and who you're going to be with. So it implies that something is really not understandable about our human existence if somebody can look into the future and give you that much of a detail. So it's not how does he do it, but what does that say about your life? What does that say about your concept of freedom?
Jordan,
so that's...
Have you ever looked into Emanuel Swedenborg?
Yes. I used to read him often, yes.
Yeah. No, I think it's crazy when you talk about people because he's somebody. And again, you know, I take everything from history and you know, take it in and decide what fits and what doesn't. So, you know, I'm certainly not saying that everything written is true or everything written isn't true.
Of course not.
Take it all in. But he's somebody who they claim not only predicted the day of his death or said the day that he would be dying, but also predicted a fire, which seems like people even tried to debunk his ability to do so and try to find a way that he was able to do this because he was several towns away and said that there was a fire in his town at that exact time and that it was going to save his house. It was going to come up just short of his home. And it takes like 3 or 4 days journey to get to that place. Well, 3 or 4 days later, somebody traveled and said, There was just a fire. We talked about it before. We said, unless the only way he could have done that is if he told somebody to go there and light the fire.
Or if he was from the future and he had a cell phone and he was getting
text messages. No, but I mean, I definitely see people that can do things like that and predict.
Now, are they using the stars to predict things? Is this what yeah, we're getting at?
Usually that's what, I mean, look at the popes. The popes all throughout the Middle Ages or the 12th, 13th, 14th, 1500s. All had astrologers.
Personal
astrologers.
Of course they did. Of course.
And every decision they made was based off of...
what about Nostradamus?
Yep. Yeah.
And I mean, he was so good at doing what he did. 500 years later, he's still thought of as a genius, that he was so accurate. So
yep.
I'm just saying that your life is not what you think it is. And if you think you're free, you better think again. Because anyone who can see into a year or two into your future and tell you exactly in minute detail everything that's going to happen to you on a particular day at a particular hour, and it happens exactly like that person said, that implies that there's a problem with your idea of freedom. What kind of freedom do you think you have? It implies that there's a bigger story here about human life. And maybe in that, and you know, thinking in that line makes me wonder if maybe there isn't some kind of a computerized matrix in which we happen to be living, and therefore, if it's a computerized matrix, you know, where do we get the idea of computers? Well, you know, we always learn from the world we live in. So, sure. It wouldn't surprise me if there is some kind of a higher technology going on that we see in movies like Men in Black and all that kind of thing. Yeah. But I am totally sure. One thing I am totally sure of, because I've been there and I've seen it with my own eyes, is that this world is far, far different than anything you think you understand. Believe me, nothing is what you think it is on this earth. I mean, I'm telling you, it's extraordinary the world we really live in.
Yep. And regardless of if you believe in the globe and space, or you believe in a flat earth or a flat plane, or regardless, just thinking about where we live, you'll realize real quickly that it's impossible. I mean, either way, either we're hung suspended in nothingness and spinning around in endless space, or we are a flat continuous plane. And then you can ask the question, well, what's underneath it? You can ask the question, what's underneath space? What's on the sides of space? So wherever we are, it is not within the human capacity, really, to understand it.
And knowing those things, whether we know them or not, is not the point or it's not the reason why we're here. There's a bigger reason why us humans are living here right now. It's not to know why things are happening.
Or where space is, or right. Where it's not.
Yeah, well, listen, that is exactly true. Our life is part of something far, far bigger. And we're like a small little fish in a fishbowl. And a big town like New York, and we just roam around among ourselves and come up with ideas between us, never realizing that there's a far, far bigger story out there that's far older than anything we've comprehended. And there's just way too much on this earth in the line of out-of-place artifacts. Mm-hmm. Things which have been found throughout the world which defy the imagination and science to explain it. There are huge pyramids in the ocean floor. There are huge temples off the coast of Cuba, off the coast of Okinawa, off the coast of even in the Bermuda Triangle, there's pyramids. There are temples in the ocean. And even the oil companies, which are on in the North Sea and then drilling for oil, when they go down to the ocean floor and begin to drill into the ocean floor, way down into the ocean floor, under the ocean, they're bringing up handmade artifacts, which implies that, you know, down there where the ocean, there was a time when the ocean wasn't there. And at that level, that's probably a billion years old, handmade artifacts. We're finding handmade artifacts in Africa, if you remember. The last couple of years, they've been talking about those little round stones. I forget the name of these stones, but they're found in strata in the earth so far down that even the paleontologists all agree that that strata is at least 3.5 billion years old. And we're finding metal objects, handmade metal objects, artifacts in strata, which is 3.5 billion years old, down in, and so I, you know, you've got to look at that and scientifically come up with an explanation. Well, science doesn't talk about those kinds of things.
No.
And there's a very good reason why science does not acknowledge or talk about these things which are found. Because they didn't find them to start with. Their university and their operation didn't find them, so they wouldn't get any kudos for finding anything. They're not going to get any checks for finding anything. So they don't want to bring it up because they didn't find it. And besides, they don't know what it means. And so if you confront them as to what these artifacts mean, they don't know. And then that will prove to you and to the world listening that they don't know what's going on. So they don't even want to deal with it because they don't understand anything about it. They can't explain it, and they get paid to make sure that they don't know anything. So it's just an extraordinary set of circumstances in which we humans find ourselves today in a world which people are paid not to understand anything. There's been a philosopher even said that. It's very difficult to get someone to believe something when they're paid to not believe it. So this is the problem we face today. Science, as I've said before, is just a religion today.
Yep. And one of the biggest problems is, too, that, you know, I look back and just see that the inventing of the printing press, which I think many people would say was the greatest invention that changed the world. It's just how, you know, in which way did it change it? Because what it allowed them to do was to mass print anything that they wanted and to get that into people's minds. And you're right. So if people put out a certain book on physics, you know, are they being trained in a direction that keeps them away from the truth? You know, that's.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And if there are discoveries that are made, or people find discoveries or to find discover things that don't match the system and the theories and the quote-unquote facts that science has established, then of course science isn't going to do
that. Right, it's just like the dinosaur bones that could be carbon dated, but they just refuse to because
You found the handmade things that are 8 million years down, and well, that doesn't match our idea of history where we told you that humans are only 100,000 or whatever.
Have you looked into Velikovsky's stuff a lot?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was working at one time with an organization called the Cronia Group, or the Cronia Communication Group, it used to be called, and it was dedicated to the work of Velikovsky. And I even hosted one of their science conferences up in Portland, Oregon, on Velikovsky, and that was a very important event that I was scared to death because I was going to be hosting a science conference in which scientists from all over the world were coming, and people, all kinds of important people from around the world were going to be there. And I was hosting the conference, and I told the people putting it on that I would, you know, I would do anything to help, but I'm not a scientist. I have no idea what to say before an audience of scientists, but it worked out all right because all I really had to do was just introduce the speakers, and so it worked out fine.
We'll be right back, guys. You're listening to Jaronism Monday Night Raw.
Good break.
You must unite what has been set us on.
We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
On the weekday. Don't be surprised, don't be surprised. Walk like us. They even talk like us.
Welcome back. You're listening to Jaronism Monday Night Raw. We're on with Jordan Maxwell. And really quick, I did want to self-promo my next video coming out soon about the spinning Earth. And in talks of these ancient beliefs and ancient understandings, it is interesting to point out that the Hebrews, the Egyptians, the Babylonians all had a flat Earth kind of concept. More than anything, they had like a stationary Earth kind of concept. The Bible certainly speaks of a stationary Earth. I think it's something like 400 times it says that the Earth cannot be moved. And then on top of that as well, a lot of people like to say, oh, the ancient Greeks, they knew that the Earth was a sphere. Yet all you need to do is read the New Testament. And we even know that that was written later than they say. But even if you said it was written in 200-300 AD, they certainly describe the Earth as not being a sphere. Otherwise, Jesus can't really come on a cloud and all eyes will see him. Those kind of things. You know, Satan takes Jesus up to the top of a mountain and shows him the entire Earth. Also not possible on any kind of a sphere structure. So it's interesting to point that out. And in my video, it's just going to be pointing out that a lot of people think that is a proven fact. And if you do the research on the spinning Earth, it has never been proven. In fact, it can't be part of scientific talk because they've accepted relativity. And if you understand general relativity, then you understand that everything is relative motion, meaning nothing is absolute. There is nothing standing still. So therefore, you cannot say the Earth goes around the sun, just as you can't say the sun goes around the Earth. Both things from the perspective of that location, if you stood on the sun, well, the Earth would be going around the sun. And if you stood on the Earth, then the sun goes around the Earth. That's scientific. Once you start venturing into which one's doing which, you are choosing your belief structure. You are choosing to use philosophy or philosophical grounds to determine what you say is true. And that's interesting for me when I look at science and say, why do they push so hard on this idea of we go around the sun? It's, you know, we go around the sun. So interesting there. But yeah, that'll be my next video. So do check that out. Jordan, did you have a chance to look at it all, that prophecy I sent you through email?
Oh, I probably did, but I forgot where it is, and I don't recall it right now. I've got so many things on my desk and coming to me every day that I get behind on everything that people send me.
I can't
go on with it.
Yeah, well, I'd send it to you just because I think it's interesting, and I've never been a doomsday kind of person or a you know, anything like that. I think that sometimes the elite do play into the prophecies of the New Testament, but one that's interesting is coming up September 23rd of this year, which is 33 days after the eclipse, and the sky will show us something that pretty clearly, at least in my estimation, is exactly described in the New Testament. In Revelation chapter 13, talks about there's a woman, and I'll actually bring it up before I read it and butcher it off the top of my head. But basically, there's a woman and
clothed with the sun.
Thank you.
And she's about to give birth to Jupiter or something.
Yeah, well, that's what's in the sky.
Or no, moon is at her feet.
Moon's at her feet. Yeah, let me bring this up. So, anyway, so yeah, it's Revelation 13, and it says, must be Revelation 12. Sorry. And Revelation 12. Or 11, or one of those. No, yeah, it's 12. So it says, a great sign appeared in heaven. So that's a good start. A woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars on her head. She was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with 7 heads, 10 horns, 7 crowns on its head. Its tail swept a third part of the stars out of the sky and flung them into the earth. The dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth so that it might devour her child the moment he was born. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who will rule all nations with an iron scepter. And her child was snatched up to God and his throne. The woman fled to the wilderness and a place prepared for her by God, and she will be taken care of for 1,260 days. And the interesting thing about that is on that exact, or on the day of September 23rd, it only happens once every 7,000 years, so I've heard. I've tried to go back as far as my planetarium software will. It'll only move 500 years in the future and 500 years back, so I can't go back 7,000 years, but it doesn't happen again in those times. But you have the Virgo constellation, which will have the moon right below her foot. It will have, she has a crown of 12 stars. She's pregnant, which is interesting because right in her little dress area is Jupiter, and between her legs. And across the sky on the opposite side, so like you would call it the other node or directly across, is the dragon Draco or Draco, I don't know how you say it. So definitely interesting there. And Jordan, I'd love to hear your opinion on, is that something you think that they'll just let go by without trying something? Or what do you think about that?
Well, first of all, that's my wedding anniversary, so September 23rd. But
is that a good sign?
Say again?
I said, is that a good sign or a bad sign?
No, it's just a sign. Well, one thing I have to say, I do have to say about my wife, is that I'm no longer married, but my wife did bring religion into my life. Because before I met her, I didn't know what hell was. But anyway, I see these things in Book of Revelation, knowing that it's an astrological book to start with. The Book of Revelation was not in the original Bible canon. It was added later. And it was taken out maybe close to a dozen times over the years. It's been put in by some Bible publishers and taken out by others, then put back in, then taken back out again. And the reason why is because the Book of Revelation actually has little to do, to nothing to do with early Christianity. It has nothing really to do with early Christianity. And so that's why it was not even originally in the Bible. And it's been taken out, as I said, so many times, implying that much of the church world realizes it was a pagan book to start with. And then it's back in the Bible now, and who knows what the future may hold. They may take it out again. But I do think that there is a lot of very important astronomical and astrological symbolism in the Book of Revelation, just as there is in the entire New Testament story of Jesus. Itself is an astrological, what I call astrotheological book. So, as far as I'm concerned, and I've only been looking at it, I'm just one person, but as far as I'm concerned, the whole story of Jesus in the New Testament is an astrological encoded story. And so if you don't understand the implications of astrology in these stories, then you'll never see it. But that's pretty much the bottom line on the New Testament story of Jesus. It's all astrological. But even knowing that, even the Book of Revelation was so far out of reach that even the people who knew did not want the Book of Revelation as to be a part of that astrological story of the New Testament because it was so far out. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. It's in the Bible now. Who knows what the ultimate? I am aware that setting dates is ludicrous on the face of it because I almost every date that's ever been set for anything never happened. So.
Every date. They're 0 for as many days as there's been.
I've had so many religious and modern day prophets who are out there making a prophet. They're not a prophet, but they're making a prophet and talking about all these wonderful and terrible things that are coming upon the earth, and they never do, and it's always forgotten, and people go on with their lives and forgot that, just last week he said the end of the world was coming. And for him, he walked out in front of a bus, and for him, the end of the world did come. But for the rest of the world, we're all here. So,
email subscriptions that I have that I get these emails from these guys, and I just have them just because I like to look at them. And there's a guy that predicts the end of the world every 3 months, and he keeps sending out these emails every time, and then he'll change the date and then do it some more. And it's just like, man, how are people even watching, reading this guy's stuff? It's really funny.
I think it's funny because, Mad Comics many years ago said so-and-so, some guy prophesied that the world was coming to an end on a certain date, and for him, he got run over by a truck. So actually, the end of the world came. For him. So, I mean, I see all this end of the world as a total misunderstanding of the scripture and the words used in the Bible. Because the very word when Jesus said, I will be with you, I think it's in Matthew 24, where Jesus said, go forth, make disciples, and preach the gospel, and I will be with you to the end of the world.
to the end of an age, yeah.
That's right, end of an age, not a world. It was aeon, A-I-O-N, aeon, and it's been mistranslated as the end of the world, not world, age, A-G-E. So the end of the age, and so we know that we're living today. Christianity began what we call the age of Pisces. Mm-hmm. The symbol for Pisces was two fish. And the next age coming after Pisces will be the age of Aquarius. And, of course, the Christians, you know, we're told in the Bible in the Old Testament that when Moses comes down from the mountain, and here I am getting on religion. I mean, we were talking about religion. I mean, I could talk for 10 hours on religion. There's so much there.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Moses comes down from the mountain with a new dispensation, a new law, a new religion. And when he comes down from the mountain talking directly with God, and God is giving him a new understanding of a new way to worship God, and he finds the rest of the Israelites worshiping the golden calf. Well, this is all astrological. It has nothing to do with actual history and things which really happen. It's an astrological story. It's a metaphor. And this is why the Bible is referred to as the greatest story ever told. It's just a story. Nobody said it actually happened. It's a story, and it's a metaphysical, encoded astrological story. So when Moses comes down from the mountain, he's bringing a new religion to the Israelites, who were used to, for 2,150 years, were used to worshiping their god in the age of Taurus the bull. And mm-hmm. Taurus the bull, they were worshiping the sun in the age of Taurus the bull. So this is why the sun is golden and the bull is the calf. So they're worshiping a golden calf, or the astrological symbol for Taurus, the sun in the age of Taurus. Now Moses comes down, and he's got a new religion now. At the end of the 2,150 years of Taurus has come to an end, so Moses goes up and gets a new religion from the God's sun, the light of the world. And he comes down with the new religion, which is now the worship of Ares the ram. And so now the Israelites are told they're now going to worship their god, the sun, in the age of Ares, the ram. So now they need to blow the ram's horn, or the shofar, rather than worshiping a golden calf, because now we're entering a new age. And, of course, all the Israelites bellyached and cried and said, no, we want to continue to worship a golden calf. And this is all that New Age stuff and all that New Age bullshit. And so we will not have anything to do with it. So eventually we're told that they finally got around to blowing the ram's horn in honor of the sun in the age of Aries, the ram, until 2,150 years later, when the age of Pisces begins. The next age would be Pisces, and the Pisces was the symbol of the two fish. And that is the beginning of what would the era of what we call Christianity. So now we're worshiping God's son in the age of Pisces, the two fish. And this is why the Pope wears the Pope's mitre as a fish head. And this is why Christians have on the back of their cars the fish, the Christian fish. It's basically the age of Aries, the age of Pisces, the two fish. Now, of course, we're now facing, this is not the new age of Aquarius yet, but we're over 2,017 years into a 2,150-year period. So we're 2,017 years into 2,150 years. So the lion's share is already gone. So we're now facing, very soon, the coming of the age of Aquarius. And, of course, with that, the Christians are now, just as we read in the Bible about the old Israelites, the Christians are now doing the same thing. The more we change, the more we say the same. So now Christians are saying, oh, that's all that bunch of bull about the new age of Aquarius. That's all that new age stuff. And, well, that's what Jesus said. I will be with you to the end of the age. A-G-E, Greek, aeon. And so there is a new age coming. It's called the Age of Aquarius. Well, what is the symbol for the Age of Aquarius? I mean, we know that the two fish were for Pisces and the golden calf was for Taurus and blowing the ram's horn was for Aries. So what is the symbol for the new age that's coming? And that is a man with a water pitcher. And so in the book, in the Bible book of Luke 22:10, look for it yourself in the Bible, New Testament, Luke 22:10, when the apostles, the 12 apostles, are asking Jesus, now that you're going to die and we're going to celebrate the last Passover meal, where are we supposed to go? Because you're going to die and what's going to happen to us? And he says, the Bible has Jesus saying, go into the city and you will see a man carrying a pitcher of water. Go into the house with the man with the water pitcher. Well, my God, you don't have to be an astronaut or a brain surgeon to figure out he's talking about the age of Aquarius, the man with the water pitcher. And so, therefore, when Christians hear that our next coming age is going to be a new age of Aquarius, they say that's all of the devil. That's all evil. That's all astrology. Never realizing for a moment that that's all their religion has ever been. That's all the Jewish religion has ever been. That's all the whole, that's why the Bible is called the greatest story ever told. It's the oldest story ever told. And the story is very simple. It's astrotheology, the worship of the heavens. You can ask a five-year-old child, Christian or Jewish child, do you believe in God? Yes. Well, where is God? And they will point out there. Well, out there is, we call it heaven. So I guess God is out there in heaven. And then you ask a Christian youth, do you believe in angels? Oh, yes. Well, where are the angels? Well, they point out there into the heavens. So I don't know if ever dawned on you, but anytime angels and God is out there, or God is in heaven, that means they're not from Detroit, and they're not from Alabama. That means they're from out there. And if they're from out there, that means they're extraterrestrial. Now you've got a bigger problem. Now what are you going to do with that? God is an extraterrestrial, and the angels have come from out there. The whole idea of theology and religion today is totally misunderstood. We could talk about this stuff, and I love talking about it because I've been looking at it for so many years. I've talked about this subject with so many different authorities, Jesuit priests and rabbis and all kinds of preachers and teachers and philosophers. It's very obvious what theology really is today and what religion is today. It has to do with something called astrology. And, most of what we call Christianity today, not the first century Christianity, because there's no connection whatsoever. This is something you need to keep in mind. There is no connection whatsoever with today's Christianity and the Christianity and its very beginnings back in the Roman Empire. It has no connection whatsoever. Today is a totally different kind of religion than the original Christianity. So yeah, I don't know what you can do with that. But boy, when you start breaking down what originally Christianity was all about and what originally the church was teaching, and understand that there was no center authority in Christianity at the beginning. There were just lots of little groups, and they had different belief systems, and they were fighting to preserve their particular beliefs. And finally, we come down to today, where it's totally different. We have totally different understandings of what the Bible is talking about, what the words mean, as opposed to what they understood, 1,000 years ago or more. It's an extraordinary story when you get into religion, and I love doing that because there's just so much juicy stuff there that people don't know about.
Yeah, once you see that facade, that barrier that they put up between you and the truth, everything makes more sense. Everything falls into place. Life actually kind of makes sense. Because before that, I was always confused and lost as to what's going on here. And then once you see through the facade, things start to make sense. What you just said about God being out there, angels being out there, you know, to me, that is absolutely by design, because it takes you away from where I feel God is, and that is inside you. That's the stomach ache you get when you hurt somebody or when you tell a lie. It's that feeling that tells you not to go in that direction, or that intuition you get, or a mother's instinct, all those things.
Right.
God, not...
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, one of the times I talked to my buddy who was a real big Christian, and I was trying to... And I just said, where is God right now? He said, well, he's up there. I said, what is he doing? He said, he's sitting here watching us. I'm like, you think that? You think that God is sitting in a chair watching humans and playing, you know, chess with the devil? Is that really what you think? You've really thought this out? And I said, where's Jesus? Oh, he's up there too. Doing what? You know what I mean? What are they doing? And he had to kind of really think about that, because I think people have just bought into too much of, like you said, it's a story, and there is some great truth in it. And we can talk about right now, because we have a little bit of time. Go ahead and give your opinion, Jordan, of Christianity, because I get attacked all the time, and people fail to realize my mom is a Christian. My wife's family's Christians, and I think Christians can be great people, and the ideals behind the idea of Christianity are great, but there's some you know, errors in there, and some things that I think we need to grow out of. What's your opinion, Jordan?
Well, I've been looking at Christianity and religions and theology in general for some 56 years, so I have my own opinion now. It's not based on off the top of my head, but it's based on 56 years of looking at, studying, researching the words, the terms, the concepts, where belief systems have come from, comparative religions, comparative theologies. And after 56 years, I have pretty much come to certain conclusions that I am totally sure I'm right on. And one is that both Christianity, Judaism, and Islam all come from that both Christianity, Judaism, and Islam come from a parent religion. They are all based on Hinduism. The Hindu religion is the basis for Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. All three of those religions have no idea in the world how they have been impacted by Greek mythology, the Hindu mythology, Hindu symbolism, ancient India in general, ancient Egypt. None of these religions just popped in out of nowhere. They all actually are part of a lineage of astrotheology and theologies that go back for thousands of years. And that's what's so difficult to deal with, is to know that there are so many people who are putting their money and their time and their effort and will and putting into their will to give their home to the church and give their money to the church, give their children to the church, never realizing for a moment where any of this stuff actually, in fact, comes from. I mean, yeah. How many people go to church and do not even know what the church means? And how many people are worshiping Jesus the Christ and they have no idea in the world where the word Christ comes from and what it means? And people are worrying about going to hell. They have no idea what the word hell actually means in the Hebrew. So I'm just saying that once you start looking at the actual etymology of words and terms and symbols and go through the ancient theologies of the world, you begin to see that the more we change, the more we stay the same. We're still crawling around on our knees to religions which are thousands of years old, and they're based on what we today refer to as pagan religions. Nothing can be further from the truth, that Christianity, Judaism, and Islam are all three pagan religions based on the incredible pagan history of theology and religions of the world. and so much in Christianity and Judaism, I don't even fool too much with Islam because it's so far out. I can't wrap my mind around something that ludicrous. But I understand the Judeo and the Christian concepts a lot better. But once you understand where these ideas and symbolism comes from in Judaism and Christianity, it really becomes fascinating because to a lot of people looking at history do not understand this. And we'll talk about it later when we come back.
Be right back.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
You're listening to Truth Frequency Radio.
We are TFR.
Welcome back. You're listening to Monday Night Raw. I'm Jaron.
I'm Misa. Not Misa.
You're not Misa. We're with Jordan Maxwell, and ultimately, we were just talking about the religions of Islam and Judaism and Christianity and their origins. And I wish people would see, you know, why I have such an issue with the God of the Bible. I get asked that more than any other question, even being a flat earther. You know, I get asked that all the time because usually what they have a problem with is, you know, that God cannot be slandered. You cannot say things about the God of the Bible. But if they really looked at the story and realized that Christianity is just they picked up the God of the Jews, the God of the Hebrews, who had a chosen people, who had a favorite group, who was basically sexist, who was basically had a group of people that he called his chosen people and that he would do, you know, for them if they followed him, and he would annihilate whoever was in his way. And people have said, well, how do you know that's not the God of this world? I don't know. If it is the God of this world, so be it. I have been given the faculties that I'm able to decide who I want to worship. And that is not a worshipable entity to me. Somebody who says, you know, do as I say, not as I do. I may murder bunches of people all at one time to get my point across or to show my glory, but you better not. You know, those things don't match my reality. I do not think this wonderful world that operates in ways I can't even fathom, the whole idea of nature in and of itself and, you know, how you know what, how a seed knows what it's going to grow into and how giving it is to grow its branches and its fruit. And those things are from a mind that is so far beyond my ability to comprehend.
And the Bible.
Yeah, when I read the Bible, that is very easily men's interpretation of different aspects of God. They give him human faculties. They give him human traits. He has a hand. He has a butt. You know, he moves in front of you. You know, it's things that seem to describe exactly as I would expect things 2,000 or 3,000 years ago to be described as. And so that's why a lot of people say, well, the flat earth matches perfectly with the Bible. How don't you then believe in the Bible? Well, the flat earth matches our observations. That's why people are looking into that, because the idea of a globe and gravity and those things don't really match a lot of our observations. But the Bible tells the observational evidence. They say the stars are innumerable. They can't be counted. Well, that's what we see, that the sun rises and sets. That's what we see. So those things do not surprise me. That is how things would have been described in a book 3,000 years ago.
It's like a book of observation, which goes along with the astrology aspect.
Correct. Yeah. So, I mean, that's why I don't just take that as meaning, oh, well, the Bible must be true. No, I think that the Bible was written by people who, people might say, well, was it inspired? Well, everything in this world is inspired. Every single thing only exists because of the Creator. So everything's inspired. I could write something down now. It's inspired by. Does it give me permission to hand it out and tell people to believe in it and show up to church on Sundays? And people don't even realize that the Catholic Church, until, I don't even know what it was, 100 years ago, the priest used to say mass facing the wall in Latin. You couldn't even understand it. You had to sit in this pews behind him and not even understand it. That wasn't until recently. Do you know what year that was, Jordan?
Yes, I'm aware of that. But, you know, the one thing that that I consider to be so important is so much of what we have been given as symbolism, words and terms in theology and religion actually means something different than what you think it does. And the more you begin to look at the study that I'm talking about, not only the etymology of words, but of the symbols which are accepted in the three different major religions of the world, and where these symbols came from and what they actually mean, as opposed to what you thought they meant, you will begin to see, once you start studying, it will become obvious to you, as it does to anyone who takes the time to study the subject, that I would say a good 90% of all the symbols in the three major religions have to do with one thing, sex, period. And yep. So once you see that, in Judaism, sex is everywhere. In Christianity, sex is everywhere. And we don't even have to bring in Islam. We know that is crammed filled with perverted sex. But I'll give you an example. You know, church steeples, when you drive by churches, you'll see the tall steeples. Church steeples are actually a male erection. This, just like in Washington, D.C., you see the Washington Monument, which is a obelisk. Well, that goes back to Egypt. Now we're talking religion in Egypt. And the and the Washington Monument is a male erection. It's called Washington's Monument. But it connects to the female ovaries, or the Oval Office. And so it's all kinds of sexual implications are in words and terms and our national coats of arms and national treasures. They're actually just symbols of sex. Again, a classic example, if you want one, I can give you about 100. In Judaism, we're told that Moses went up into the mountain at God's request, and God was going to give him a new theology and a new religion. And he comes down and he's got something called the Ten Commandments. Well, first of all, the Ten Commandments were what we call the Ten Commandments in Judaism is based on an Egyptian set of commandments called the 12 Negative Confessions. The 12 Negative Confessions were 12 commandments that the Egyptians were given by their god, and when you read it, it's almost identical but backwards. So instead of saying thou shalt not do this and that, the Egyptians said, I will not do this or that, I will not lie, I will not steal, I will not do this, I will not do that. While the Ten Commandments say thou shalt not, you should not do this, you should not do that. And so the Ten Commandments is actually based on the Egyptian 12 negative confessions. They took two out and make it 10 because it's one and O, I-O. And there's a reason for that too, because it goes back to the At-10 and to the Adam and the I-O. All very, very interesting stuff when you get into it. But I digress from where I was going with this. So Moses comes down from the mountain and he brings the Ten Commandments. And when we talk about that, we think about Charlton Heston and the Ten Commandments. And he comes down with these two big plates from which are written the Ten Commandments. Well, actually, the scripture says that they were two small round stones that could be held in one hand. They were round. And they were small enough that two round stones could be held in one hand. And they were written all around the side, all around the surface in a circle. So they were not big plates Moses carrying down. That's Hollywood. The actual scripture says that they were round stones, and they were written all around them, and they could be held in one hand. And so they were called, we call them the stones, we call them the Ten Commandments. But in the Hebrew religion, they're called the stones of the testimony. So, yeah, they came down, Moses comes down with the two stones of the testimony. But where do we get the word testimony? It comes from testes. The two round stones you can hold in one hand is testicles, testes. This is where it comes from. And so most people don't realize it. When Moses comes down with the Ten Commandments, no, it's the 12 negative confessions, and he's carrying down and he's bringing it down with two round stones that can be held in one hand, and they're called the stones of the testimony because they're testifying. And where do you get the word test or testifying? A testimonial from testes. That's where the word comes from. And so in the ancient world, it's probably still done in Israel today, but in the ancient world or the old world of Judaism, if you went into a court and bring in your brother Jew into a court, the court of the Jews was based on the Egyptian courts. The Egyptian courts, if you bring a fellow Egyptian, and also in Judaism, if you're a Jew and you bring in a fellow Jew before a court, you were required by court law to hold your testicles in your hand when you're talking about and making your case before the judge. So that's where we get our idea of a testimony or testimonial. So you were they were putting you under a test. And the idea is that they're holding your testicles, or the two stones of the testimony, because if you're lying, you know, you're going to be in serious trouble. and that's the symbolism. That is the symbolism. So today we even say, you know, they have you and yeah, by the testicles, right?
Oh, there's so many of those words that are incredible that if people really looked into the etymology.
I know.
Of them, you know, people always talk about son or son, and people think this is some accident. That's not you can't possibly have been an accident. And if you look at some other ones, they're interesting. Like, what about some and some? Some meaning
of course
things, but some is the addition of all things. Kind of weird thing. And you know, one and one, you won something. But then if you're the number one, just weird that those two words would be the same. Or none, N-O-N-E, and none, like the nun from, you know, religion. Come and come. I've always looked at all these lesson and lesson. You know, if you lessen someone's knowledge by giving them a lesson, you know, herd and herd, a herd of sheep, but you,
yep, you're right.
You're listening, you're following your sheep, you're just believing what you're told.
The word listen has the same letters as silent.
Interesting. And earn and earn, I thought was interesting too. Earn, E-A-R-N, and earn, like an urn that you end up in if you're cremated.
Yeah,
interesting. There's so many more. Naval and naval.
Now, was our language just created to confuse us? Is that the whole point?
No, I think it's secret. There's hidden meanings behind everything. You know.
Well, the New Testament story of Jesus is without a doubt in my mind a metaphor, an encoded symbolic story. It's an encoded message. We hear a lot today about Bible codes. Well, there is Bible codes in the original and in what was referred to as the original Hebrew. Rabbis will tell you that there are codes in the original Hebrew, not in the King James translation of the Old Testament, but in the original Hebrew there are codes. And so I guess you would call them Bible codes. But there are other Bible codes that are right in your face in the New Testament, but people have no idea because they're not looking for it. But once you understand what the New Testament is saying and what the people in the New Testament represent, then you begin to perceive something that has been in front of you from day one. You never saw it. And that is that Jesus is not a man who actually lived, but the story in the Bible, and it's a story, but Jesus is not a man as such, but Jesus represents the Son, the S-U-N. And so, well, if you understand the religion that came out of Egypt, then you will begin to see the conceptual ideas that were believed about Jesus. The Egyptians said that the sun was our risen savior. And of course, if the sun doesn't rise in the morning, you're dead in 3 weeks. So I guess it is your risen savior. And the ancient Egyptians said that the sun brought, he gave his life so that you might live. Well, the Egyptians said that the sun was pure energy, and energy is life. And so when you completely run out of energy, you plop on the bed and you say, I'm dead. Not dead, but you're dead tired, meaning you've run out of energy. And so the Egyptians said that the sun was pure energy, and that if the sun did not share his energy with us in the universe and in the solar system, that he could probably live forever because he's nothing but pure energy. But the sun is gracious enough to share his energy with us so that our plants can grow, we can have warm days, we can have food, we can live, we can have, reproduce and live. But why? Because of the sun. If we don't have the sun, we're dead in 3 weeks. So therefore, the sun was giving his energy so that there might be life on our planet. So the bottom line was God's sun, the light of the world, is giving his life so that you might live. And of course, you have to ask the question, who owns the sun? Well, the Russians don't own the sun. Africans don't own it. And America thinks they own everything, but they don't own the sun. So who owns the sun? Well, obviously, nobody on the earth owns the sun. Well, who owns it? Well, theoretically, I guess you could say God owns it. Okay, then it's God's sun, right? And God's sun is the light of the world. Of course the sun is the light of the world. What else lights the world if it's not the sun? And so God's sun is the light of the world, and he has 12 helpers, or 12 followers. That's right, the 12 signs of the zodiac, which represent the 12 months of the year, which is the 12 tribes of Israel, and the 12 brothers of Joseph, and the 12 apostles. And we could go on for hours about the 12 this and the 12 that. It's all based on the 12 signs of the zodiac with its master. The zodiac's master is the sun.
And 360 degrees divided by 12 would be 30, which is the age that Jesus went about his work.
That's right. Now you're starting to catch on. That's exactly right. It's all astrological. It's an astrological story. Why astrological? Because astrological implies out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, therefore, it's out there. So I don't care about this evolution material. The evolution, it's ludicrous on the face of it, but I think in place of evolution, we need to look at intervention, because I do believe, there's no doubt in my mind, I don't care what anybody else believes, there's no doubt in my mind that this earth has been the home to some incredibly brilliant life forms. I hasten to use humans. I don't think they were human, but incredible life forms with technology that just far outshines us. Their technology, in my mind, the ancient prehistoric and ancient creatures and their technology compared to us today is like comparing the brilliance of the noonday sun to the faint glow of a firefly's butt. There's just no comparison at all. We cannot build skyscrapers, 55-story high pyramids, and climb up the outside of the pyramid with the 25-ton stone. And I've been in the pyramids 3 times. I was blessed in the king's chamber, and I've been all over Egypt. I've seen the temples and the great, and to hear people tell me that the pyramids were built as tombs for the Pharaoh is so ludicrous. I'm ashamed to even talk to people about such a subject. Because anybody who has a modicum of education knows that the pharaohs were buried in the Valley of the Kings. That's about 25 miles south of the or more south of the pyramids. There were no pharaohs buried in a pyramid. And so, well, what are the pyramids for? Oh, well, now that's an intelligent question you should have started off with. What are the pyramids really for? And what is the symbol on the back of a dollar bill? On the back of your $1 bill is a pyramid with an all-seeing eye. Why is a pyramid on our dollar bill? And how come over on the right side of the back of the dollar bill you will see an eagle? And the eagle has two wings, a left wing and right wing. That's why you only have two political systems in America, left wing and right wing, because the eagle only has two wings. And above the eagle, that has the two wings, left wing and right wing, which implies that there's a brain that operates both sides of the eagle. Above that eagle's head is a 13 stars. Look at the back of the dollar bill, and over the eagle's head, there are 13 stars. Look at the configuration of all 13 stars together, and what do they make up? What kind of a symbol is the 13 stars together? What do they make up? You will see it's a hexagram of the Star of David. So now why is the Star of David over the head of the Washington, D.C.'s Federal Reserve note, what we call our dollar bill, with the pyramids, with an all-seeing eye in the pyramids, with the Star of David over the eagle? The eagle only has two wings. Why does the eagle on the dollar bill have nine tail feathers? There's a reason for that. There's a reason for all of these symbols and emblems and words and terms, but it doesn't really seem to matter. Because like George Carlin said, nobody noticed, nobody seemed to care. But it means something very frightening and very, very interesting if you look into all the symbols on the dollar bill and all the symbols that are used in industry, in government, in military. There's a lot of things that we are just not aware of. And I'm telling you, it's fascinating when you begin to see what's been all over us and all around us from day one that we just were not aware of. We are so concerned with Paris Hilton and the football game, it never dawned on us that there are brilliant minds on this earth who have been manipulating and screwing us into the ground, lying to us and talking to us, talking down to us, teaching us things which are not true. It's like parents telling their children about Santa Claus. Well, adults are still being talked to by your government. And there's a law in this country, in America, that says your government is a parent. It's, if you go on my website, into my research website, I got a whole thing on that, and you can see all the implications of that law. But the law says that our government in America is your parent. It owns you. It gave birth to you. And so it is your parent. And, of course, as your parent, it has the right to protect you from hearing anything you're not supposed to hear. Because that's what parents do. They keep their children from hearing adult stuff that they don't want their children to hear. Well, that's exactly what the U.S. government is. It's your parent by law. And it does not want you hearing things you're not supposed to hear. You just watch your TV and worry yourself sick over Paris Hilton in the football game and stay out of the way of the masters who run this world. So I'm just ashamed of what we have become in America. We had a great start, like Thomas Paine said at the founding of this country. He said, we have an opportunity to start a whole new world. And it grew very quickly, and people from all over the world came to America for freedom, liberty, and justice, intelligence, and wisdom to be somebody, to apply your mind to be something in this world. It became one of the most powerful nations on the face of the earth until we got taken over by a coup d'etat and overthrown our government in the hands of criminals and fascists and murderers and all kind, and especially religions, all the churches from Europe, the Vatican. My God, there's a whole story there. When you understand the Vatican in America, what it really is, and how the United States is actually a reenactment of the Holy Roman Empire. If you go back into history, read the history of Rome, you will see that Caesar ruled Rome from something, from a place in history called the hill. It was something called Capitoline Hill. Mm-hmm. So Caesar ruled Rome from Capitol Hill. Get it? and so the history book said, see, every morning Caesar would go up on the hill. Well, we say the same thing. Well, the president up on the hill today, that's Rome. That's Vatican. That's Jesuit. That's Catholic. And yeah, so our whole country is a Roman Empire. And like Rome, we're now falling apart, just as the Roman Empire did in the 5th century. That's what we're now doing. We're now falling apart. The Roman Empire has become so corrupt, so evil, and so profoundly evil that the whole entire superstructure of Western civilization based on Rome is now collapsing. And God knows what that means, because there's going to be some serious problems coming in this country real soon. I have no idea in the world if anybody is even beginning to understand how much trouble this country and the people of this world in general really are. It's an incredible story of betrayal, lies, deception, and the way we've been manipulated into thinking that life is going to go on forever. Well, it's not. We're in trouble, and our empire is collapsing. And so I think it's an idea whose time has come to educate yourself as to who you really are, where you come from. And remember that it was Alexander the Great said that history is nothing but a bunch of lies that we've all agreed on. So that's the name of the tune.
For the people who have issues with the things that I question, I simply say that all I'm doing is researching the things that I was told were facts. And if I find out that they are facts, then that's awesome. Then I know that I was taught the truth. And if I find out not, then that's going to teach me, get me even closer to the truth. And I don't see any issue with that, and nobody should see an issue with that. But you're absolutely right about some of the, the start of the United States was in the right direction. And I love some of the quotes by like Thomas Jefferson. He said a great one about God, just saying, question with boldness even the existence of a God, because if there be one, he must approve of the homage of reason more than that of blindfolded fear. And that's absolutely the truth, is that there's no way the creator of this world put you here so that you follow the words of a book, and that's it. Don't do anything else. Anything else is from the devil. We'll be right back, guys. You're listening to Jaronism Monday Night Raw.
Your protection from deception. This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Jaronism Monday Night Raw. I'm Jaron.
I'm Missa.
And we're here with Jordan Maxwell. And I just wanted to, something you brought up there, and I thought it rang a bell with me, was the problem with the world, if I had to pick one word, one word that could fix everything, one word that is certainly important in every interaction, every moment, every second we have, and something that has fallen away from people, and that word is honesty. That every disagreement, every fight, every bit of confusion is all because people have a hard time now being honest. And that is the nature of every problem that we have. Somebody realized long ago that as long as you believe this and I know some truth and I don't tell you, I can work one over on you. And that is the story of mankind, that from that point on, it was all about, oh, well, these kings are, they're given these, you know, given this glory from God, and these people, these are descendants of the gods. And it's all been about lies, lying to this person, lying to this group, the way that people get taxes from us, the way that the monetary system works, you name it, in every aspect, fiat currency. You could go on for the rest of your life explaining how this world operates on the idea of lies. And if everybody was just honest, I know when we got together, that was from day one something that we both wanted to do different, that we both understood that our past relationships hadn't worked because of dishonesty. And we said, you know what, it's better if you be honest and we'll deal with that now rather than ever be dishonest. And then 5 years later, you find out so-and-so, well, then there was, you just wasted somebody's life. You wasted 5 years. You got married for the wrong, you know. And I think that's what allows us to be so strong, is we have no problem being honest. And
it sounds so simple, wish the world, but it's true.
Yeah, I wish the world would just work that way. But because everywhere, Jordan, I'm sure you've seen it. Is it one lie after another or what?
Yes, that's unfortunately. When you said one word, you were right. That's a very good word. I would have said the one word would be education. If you boil it all down to being educated, meaning doing some research on your own and understanding what the words mean. Right. Like one of my teachers many years ago kept emphasizing, define your terms. Define, when you talk about God, you know, to me, God is simply dog spelled backwards.
Yep.
But if you're going to talk about God, define your terms. What are you talking about? How do you view God? And that may be totally different than the way I view God. So define your terms first before you start discussing any subject. So once you understand that for every person on the block, there's a different understanding of a word. So I've been looking at this subject of theology only because I have been fascinated since a child with the idea of God, angels, demons, otherworld entities, UFOs, extraterrestrials. I'm just fascinated with the other world that we are not privy to and know too much about. And I think I've said this before, but I think it's appropriate to say here too. When I was like 9 or 10 years old, I was born and raised in a Catholic school, Catholic church, and Catholic environment.
Yeah, I think you told the last 2 weeks ago. But I wanted to ask you something real quick. When you say about education, did you, when you grew up, you said, because I know you told the story about you had second-guessed things that you were told. I'm just wondering why you were able to do that and I wasn't. Because going through school, I thought that the purpose of school was that all 30 of us kids got into a room and we all sat in our desks and the teacher gave us the truth and we memorized it. And that's how we moved forward with society, and that's how we made sure everybody was now going back and looking at it. I clearly see what it was.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, what about your childhood made you question those things from the beginning? Because I had to wait 30 years.
You mean schooling, not so much religion?
What about schooling?
Yeah.
Well, I used to ask the adults around me, my uncles and my aunts and uncles and friends of the family. I used to, as a kid, as a little kid, I would ask questions, because I trusted that they would know. But their answers always showed me that they didn't know what they were talking about. They would hum-haw around, and if you ask a question once, in simple question, and you got three adults, all three will have different opinions. And so I understood, well, they're giving me their opinion. I don't want an opinion. I want the bottom line. What is it for sure? I don't care about your opinion. And so I guess my mother always coached me and kept saying to me, always do research on your own. Don't just believe something because somebody says it. Because people talk all the time, and it doesn't mean they're right. It doesn't mean they're truthful. It doesn't mean that they even know what they're talking about. So always do your own research. Do your own thinking.
Yeah, that's something I was never told. My parents, yeah. I thought school was to educate us, and I thought Catholicism was the end-all, be-all. That's the way I was raised. And again, I owe a lot to Christianity because I will admit that I think I'm a better person today because of
it. Well, I am too. I would totally agree with that. That I learned so many very good things from just reading the words attributed to Jesus and the conceptual ideas about how to interact and interrelate to each other from a Christian point of view, I think helped me to be a much better person. And of course, my mother and my whole family were Christians. So I'm not complaining about Christianity and its great teachings. I'm talking about the church and that monstrosity that we call the churchianity today, which has nothing to do with real Christianity. I have a very high respect for the words attributed to Jesus. I don't have any problem with that. But I'm also smart enough to know that Mary, a young girl, did not give birth to God, and if we, we humans put God on a stake and he died on a cross, my God, what does that tell you about God? I mean, we humans can kill God.
Right. And then where?
It's all right because we humans can give birth to God too.
Without intercourse, it just magically happens. And one of the things that I know you've said it a million times too, but the first two commandments of Jesus, I think, are the best things ever said. That those are what you should do: love God with all your heart, love your neighbor like yourself.
That's it.
That is the way to operate the world. But unfortunately, it comes with a bunch of other things. And I simply don't think that the smartest thing to do would be to ever worship any man that's ever walked on earth, period. And,
I totally agree.
Yeah, people who've read the Old Testament where God tells you that, says not to worship man, says not to worship anything in the sky above or the ground below.
Right.
People are saying they worship Jesus who's going to come on a cloud. Well, how do you come on a cloud unless you're up in the sky? And that's who people, they pray to him. I mean, have you ever looked at this, Jordan? The idea that the Bible could be possibly written from the perspective of Satan, that it describes, this jealous, vindictive God, and the devil is really not Satan or Lucifer, is not really ever talked about in a really bad way throughout the entire book. In fact, it's kind of, sets it up, the scene at the beginning where God says, if you eat from the tree, you'll surely die, and then they don't actually die. It could have meant that he meant in the future, but regardless, it looks like Satan is the one, or Lucifer is the one that came and changed or actually told the truth by saying, no, you won't die. You'll just know the difference between good and evil.
Lucifer is different from Satan.
Yeah, just combining them all. But, I mean, have you ever looked at the idea
Of course I have, of course. And I'll even go a step further and say that it's an actual provable fact that Lucifer has nothing to do with the devil at all. Lucifer is not the devil. Satan is said to be the devil, not Lucifer.
Lucifer
is actually Jesus. Jesus said, I am Lucifer. In the scriptures, it's actually written in all your reference books. If you go to a Christian theological encyclopedias and dictionaries and look up Lucifer, all the reference books will tell you that Lucifer has nothing to do with the devil at all. It is misunderstanding, and that Lucifer is actually a name in the Bible in the book of Revelation for Jesus. And then in Revelation 22:16, Jesus said, I am Lucifer. So I don't know what you can do with that, but for Christians, you need to understand Lucifer is actually Jesus.
Well, it would kind of be a better story. If you look at the Bible, the Bible would make a lot more sense to people if they kind of got the whole gist of it by the end and you see, oh, Jesus was the light bringer. Okay, I see.
That's right.
All ties into, yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, and so you know, he said, Jesus is the light of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, well, what does Lucifer mean? It means the one who brings light.
Right, yep.
Well, Jesus said, I am the light of the world. And we say that Jesus brought light into the world.
And he'll be coming.
He's the light of the world. Well, light is Luciferian, Lucius. And so then we get into the symbolism and the Roman and Greek symbolism of light and darkness and the war between the light and the dark. And this is the bottom line on religion. This is the basics, one of the oldest concepts in religion ever developed on the earth by humans was the war between the good God and the devil and the evil one, or between the good and the light and the darkness. All religions can be traced back to a concept of the war in the heavens between the sun and the darkness. Because yep. when the sun comes up, we have warmth, we have energy, we have light. The world belongs to us, we humans. We have minds and spirits, and we can understand and enjoy life and do things when the sun comes up. And so the sun represented wonderful things. It represents the light and warmth and energy and food.
And it guess what turns water into wine?
Yes, well, that's easy to understand once you understand that the sun draws water. And so the story was in the Bible that the mother of Jesus asked him to draw the water and change it into wine so that everyone would have wine. Well, that's what the sun does. The sun, during the day, evaporates, and the water evaporates and draws water. It's evaporating up into the atmosphere and becomes a cloud. Then the cloud floats over the dry area of the earth, and then it begins to rain. And so the rain pours down upon the grape trees, and the grapes grow. And so the grapes grow because they'll become very juicy. Why? Because of the water that was raining on them. And so, the sun, God's son, the light of the world, was listening to his mother, Mother Nature, Mother Earth. So Mother Nature asked God's son to let it rain so you can smash the grapes and change water into wine. And this was called the Marriage Feast of Cana. And then at the Marriage Feast of Cana, what was that the celebration of? It was a celebration of what we call Easter. Mm-hmm. It was called the Passover or the Marriage Feast of Cana, where God the Father is going to be married to Mother Earth. And this is what spring represented, God the Father marrying Mother Earth. And so he was going to impregnate the mother, and she was going to give birth to life. Well, that's what happens. God the Father lets it rain on Mother Earth and Mother Nature, and life grows. And so the sacred fluid coming from the Father impregnated our mother, Mother Nature, and Mother Earth, and life grows because of it. So in India, one of the most important names for God was Rain, R-A-I-N. That's the name of a god in India, Rain. And so today, we still have God the Father impregnating Mother Earth with rain, the sacred fluid. But you can't have God the Father impregnating Mother Earth without a marriage. And so you have to have the marriage of the marriage feast of Cana, which was the Easter celebration. We call it today the Passover or Easter. It's a very it's very simple. Once you get to understand that all of this stories in the Bible are symbolism, words, concepts, and ideas that were developed in the ancient. Very ancient world, and has come down to us today. We still believe the same things. We're still talking about the same ideas. This is why if you become a Christian, you're going to have to get baptized so that you can be born again. Why? Because when you were born, your mother's water broke. You were encapsulated in a bag of water in your mother. But when her water broke, you came out to life. So we say you were born. Therefore, to be born again, you have to go back into your mother's water. So you go back into mother's water, Mother Nature, Mother Earth, and you go back into her water, and then you go under and you pop out from her water, and now you are born again. And, you know, Christians think that this is so holy. It's just talking about the way life actually works. You want to be born again? Yeah, I want to go back into your mother and go in the water and then come back again. So, you know, it's just amazing how much we don't know about religion. I mean, the idea that you give 20% or 15% of your income to the church, which is tithing, and everything, oh, this is something you should do, is you should support the church. That's not what tithing was. That's not what it was at all. It had nothing to do with that whatsoever. Tithing comes from an ancient, very ancient idea that when you harvest your crops each year in the ancient world, you don't eat it all, because if you eat everything, then you don't have anything to plant the next year. So you hold out 10% of the seeds and the food and put it into some kind of a place where it will be safe for a year, so that next year, when it's time to plant for new food, you will give back 10% what you took from the earth last time, God gave you last time. You're giving 10% back to God, so that he will produce a new crop for you. So you're giving God back 10% from all that he's given you. Okay, so that means if you are making money, that means God gave you the job, so therefore you need to pay the church 10%. No, it had to do with holding out 10% of the crop, so you'll have something to plant next year. So it's, you know, theoretically you're giving the 10% back to God. But the church uses this to make money, to manipulate people, to exploit their ignorance. The church is intellectually dishonest, doesn't tell you where the symbols come from, doesn't tell you it's all based on sex and drugs and alcohol and drug addiction. So much of what we have in religion today is just will amaze you when you begin to see how much the whole subject of sex, manipulation, exploitation of ignorance gives us what we call today religion throughout the world. And then when you see what people do in their religions, like the Muslims don't mind marrying 7 and 8 year old little girls, killing them by having sex with them, and some of them die. It's an incredible world of strange ignorance and stupidity. That, but it's a respected religion. You know, it's the fastest growing religion.
Yeah,
so I look at all of this and I'm just amazed. I don't know what to say anymore. But if you really want to know what is really going on, if it's something that you really care about, this is why I do what I do. I have put it onto my website. And you talked about that at first, and I'd like to re-talk about it for a few moments. On my website, Jordan Maxwell Show, because there are other websites out there with my name on it that don't belong to me. But Jordan Maxwell Show is my website. And if you go on there, there's a research website I have on there that you can join for a one-time donation, for a lifetime subscription, and all I'm doing is I'm just downloading, or I should say uploading, all kinds of material, research documents, pictures, links, people, ebooks, audio, video, all kinds of research on the world you live in that you've never heard of before, and especially in religion and government and banking and, you know, the whole world of mankind that we live in. So I've just been doing this stuff for so many years. So if you want to follow my work, just go on Jordan Maxwell's show and join the research society. It's called a research website, but it's a private website, as you said. And you have to join, because that protects me, because I don't want to put the kind of stuff I put on that research. I'm not going to put it out in the public. Mm-hmm. You can get in trouble if you put stuff in the public eye that you're not supposed to be. You're not even supposed to know about, much less put out. And so I was told by lawyers that if you're going to put stuff on your website that could get you in trouble, than putting it into a private website. And the reason why, and I said this last time, but I think I'll say it again, is because there's a private you and a public you. And so if you go to a restaurant, as I said last time, if you go out for dinner with about 10 of your friends and you got a big table in the back of the restaurant and all of you are sitting around the table, you're all friends, you can say anything you want, no matter how vulgar or how distasteful. You can say anything you want about anybody you want, as long as everybody at the table will let you. You can say anything you want because it's a private conversation. Nobody in the restaurant has any reason to say anything to you about what you were talking about because nobody knows what you were talking about. It's private. But if you go out on the radio and start talking the same way you did last night at the dinner table and you're talking in the public, now you can get in trouble because now you're going to the public with this talk. And this is what the government is empowered to do, is to protect the public from this kind of language. And so that's why if you're going to talk about something that may get you in trouble or talk about information that you're not supposed to talk about, you're not supposed to know about, then you better do it privately around the table and don't do it on radio. And so that's why I put all of my materials into a research website that you can join for one-time donation to my work. And so it's there. All you have to do is just join. And I've got a 4 terabyte external hard drive with all of the stuff that's going to be going on that website. And I've already got a lot on there, but I got 4 terabytes more that I'm waiting for my webmaster to. He's working around the clock, putting as much on as he can every day. So it's going to be a very, very big site of strange stuff that people have never heard before.
It's already quite packed. Jordan, I did give people an opportunity if they wanted to ask you a question to comment on the Facebook here. Somebody asked if you had heard of or have any idea about the Mandela effect.
I've heard about it.
You're like me.
It's not a subject that caught my attention at all. No, I don't really care about it. I understand the concept, but it just doesn't interest me at the moment.
It's happening. It doesn't. You're not going to be able to ever pinpoint it. And if we're being manipulated like that, to where
I think it just the ability for people to repeat things without checking them first.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You just think one way, and that just becomes the kind of general consensus.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the other thing I wanted to say, because you had a great point about religions and taking the tithing. I know we'd done the math before by looking up how many Christian families there were just in the United States. I'm talking, and there was, I think it said 60 million. And then we multiplied that by the average that they donate, which was $800, which is very low, I think. And it's not 10%, certainly not. It would be way lower than that. But at $800, that was $48 billion a year. And divide that by the number of days in a year, it's $150 million a day. And again, if people know my problems with NASA and what they've contributed for their $52 million a day, well, then you've got Christianity that's raking in $150 million a day. And, just be sure that that money is going to the things that you want it to go to. If you want it to go to people that are hungry and sick, because, again, 30,000 children dying a day due to malaria, due to diarrhea, easily cured diseases, to where we could give them $100 a day, each of those children, $100 a day, which would be fine, right? But that would only be $3 million a day, which would knock down Christianity's money from $150 million to $147 million. Those are the kind of things where I'm just hoping people see where their money's going. And if you think it's going to good things, because I'm certainly not one that would say that it's all going to bad things. There's great churches out there that have great programs and feed the homeless. But I could tell that story about the gas station the other day. I went to the gas station and saw this homeless guy, or not homeless, he seemed like he was homeless, but he came over and asked me if I had any money, and I said I had some change. And then I stood there. I was doing, filling up my gas and cleaning the windows about 15 minutes, and I watched him. And he went to 8 different people, and at least 7 of those 8 gave him $1. Or it could have been a 5. I couldn't see from my distance. But I started thinking, I'm like, man, 15 minutes, and this guy just took in 7 or 8 bucks. Like, no wonder we have homeless people if they're making that kind of money at a gas station. We'll be right back with Jordan Maxwell and Sharon.
We are TFR.
My faith in destiny is all I need to prevail.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Everybody to the best show on Monday nights ever. I don't even go the way Jaren says the Monday nights from 6 to 9. It's the best.
Virtually the best show.
Oh, okay, virtually. No, I don't even say that. I think it is the best show. But welcome back, everybody. Babe, I wanted to comment on what you're talking about, the churches and giving and stuff.
Uh-huh.
I think you just fail to understand that, like my brother-in-law says, he says, it's not that you have to give. To me, it's you get to.
You get to give to the church.
You get to donate money to me. So I just wanted to throw that out there and make sure you understand that.
Okay. Now I know. I get to give money.
Now, I have a question for you, Jordan. It's, I guess, sort of along the lines of the... How do I ask this, babe, without sounding rude? Can you ask it for me?
Jordan, she wants to know if Jordan Maxwell is your real name.
Yeah.
No. I took that name many years ago. There are some goofy born-again Christians out there who are claiming that if you change your name, it's because you're a criminal and you are, you're involved in some dirty, satanic, criminal activity, and that's why you change your name, even though there are 37 different people in the Old Testament that had their name changed, and there's about 10 people in the New Testament that had their name changed from Saul of Tarsus to the Apostle Paul. But that's all right, because that's in the Bible, and so those were good people. But if you change your name today, obviously you've done that because you are a criminal and you're involved in some really dark and dirty stuff. And so I'm just amazed at the way that people will handle if they find out this is not your birth name. Virtually nobody in the motion picture or television or news or the entertainment industry, period, uses their own name. It's an idea that is rampant in all of the entertainment media around the world. People do not use their own name. My name was changed back in 1988, 89, and for me. I didn't change it. My name was changed for me. And so I accepted it because it was already done. And so I went to the federal courts and went through the process of a couple of $1,000s over the months going through the federal courts and actually changed my name to Jordan Maxwell. And so, but I didn't do it because I was into nefarious activities and child sacrifice. I did it because the producer of my television show that I was doing in Hollywood did that for me. He decided to call me Jordan Maxwell. I didn't even know that he was doing that until I saw the director's cut of the TV show I was doing. And I found out that my name was Jordan Maxwell. And so instead of rant and raving, I'm smart enough to know, I've lived in Hollywood for 56 years, that this is normal, that producers and motion picture studios will change your name for protection. And so I know that it was done to protect me. But why? It's because my producer and his attorneys told me, there are going to be a lot of people who will want you dead because of what you do, because of who you are. And any time you're exposing the lies and deception of the world in which you live, there are going to be people who are not going to want you around. and they will threaten your family. They'll threaten your wife. They'll threaten you with threaten your life. They'll threaten your work. So if you want to keep your family safe, you might want to change your name so that if they're going to come looking for you, they're not going to find you. And so this is what many, many, many movie stars and as I said, and people in the public eye have done for years. It's normal. If you're in the entertainment business, you know that's absolutely normal. And so, but there are certain Christian groups that are so challenged by what I do. They are scared to death of what I do. And so they cannot confront my accusations about the church and about religion. They can't deal with that. So they again go on an ad hominem attack on my name, my person, my family, my work, and attack me instead of attacking what I'm saying. And so, in point of fact, I have my name changed back in 1989 by my producer in Hollywood, not me. I didn't do it.
Right, and I've told people over and over again that it's crazy the amount of people out there who judge people not by their works, not by their words, but by other people's opinions or whether or not you're a Christian.
Or Wikipedia just, says about you.
Yeah, just 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had somebody who went off on us, made a whole video about it, and just went on and on about how we are from the devil, that come see how much money we make. And it just gets crazy because then in the comments section, and this person during this conversation here said he has never read the Bible. He's a Christian, but he says he's never read the Bible. He doesn't need to. He gets direct downloads from God. That's what this person actually said. Yeah, I was like, whoa, wow, that's impressive.
Okay.
And in the comment section, it was just filled with Christians saying, yeah, brother, you tell him. Yeah, yeah, preach on. And it's like, man, they don't even look at the...
Like, we've actually read the Bible.
I've actually read the Bible, and I'm talking about it. And I'm saying constantly, Jordan, I don't know about you, but this is the one thing I say. I would never accuse the creator of murder. I would never accuse God of the atrocities that are just dealt, just given to him in the Bible.
There's people to blame for those things.
Right. I mean, I would blame everything possible before I ever said, oh, maybe the creator did it.
Yeah.
But, and so I say God never killed anybody. And he may have, but why would I accuse him of something or accuse the source of something until...
Because the book said it.
Yeah, until it's been proven to me. And that's the crazy to me is that I'm blaspheming because I'm saying God didn't kill anybody. And the people who are true Christians, the ones who love their brothers and their neighbors, are the ones who say God certainly killed a bunch of people because he did it in judgment.
It wasn't murder. It wasn't murder.
It's judgment. That's different. Well, look at the world we have, and you've got – we just heard on the commercial 2 commercials ago that they're about to execute people. Do you really want to put the death of someone else on your hands? That is crazy to me. I mean, the only people you should ever kill are people who say, please kill me. If somebody says that they're not – then you can take them out if you want to execute them. But if somebody's saying they're innocent, you absolutely do not have a right to take their life, even if all the evidence points to them. Then they don't deserve to live in society, and I'll agree with that. Lock them up. But I
suffer for what they did if they murdered somebody.
Right. But yeah, I don't think suffer. I mean, capital punishment is just ridiculous to me. I don't know. It's just crazy the amount of things that people accept.
Well, for me, there was a guy named Chris White back in Tennessee. He's a preacher that was he got out of jail for running drugs and lost his family, lost everything. And then he found out that running drugs is not too cool because he went to prison for it. So then when he came out of prison, he still wanted to make some money. So he found the Lord Jesus. And now that's the best way to make money now is to peddle the Lord Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so he's the one that started this whole thing. Let me tell you how it began. Many years ago, back in 1989, when my first video production in Hollywood was being done, my producer gave me that name, and I didn't know it. And then once it was out on the market, I got a rabbi email me, and I was just getting into the computers at the time. But I got an email from a rabbi saying, Jordan, are you aware that Helena Blavatsky – in her book, Isis Unveiled, and religion. There was a two-part book series by Helena Blavatsky called Isis Unveiled. One was government and the other was religion. And he said in that book that she gave a prophecy that said that in the last days there would come a man who would expose religion and government and all the conspiracies and all kinds of dark stuff, and his name would be Jordanus Maximus. And are you aware of that? And I said, no, I had no idea. And so he said, well, go here. Here's the book. Go get the book, and here it's on page so-and-so. So I did. I went and bought the book, and sure, there it is. Jordanus Maximus was prophesied to come and expose the world to all the corruption and everything that's going on. And this was back in the 1880s.
1980s.
So on my website, which I don't have anymore, but on my original website, I had a section in there on words to look up, and I had about 50 or 60 interesting words that most people have never heard of that are important. And so one of those words I put on there myself on the website, I said, there's an interesting word I've been made aware of called Jordanus Maximus. And then I put what I scanned off of the book there on my website. And I said on my own website, I'm the one that put it there. I said, I just think this was interesting. I had a rabbi send me this article, and I just think it's interesting. And I say that if you go, you know, if you were reading my old website, it said, I'm just throwing this in because it's interesting. I don't know if it means anything, but I just thought it was interesting.
Well, to me,
and so Chris White back in the, you know, he's one of the great theologians of the 12th century. He looks at that and says, oh, wow, there it is. Now we got Jordan for sure. Now we've got him because he changed his name to Jordanus Maximus or Jordan Maxwell because of Helena Blavatsky. When in point of fact, actually, my producer went on his show. My producer called Chris White on his radio show and said, Chris, you're totally wrong. I gave that name to Jordan Maxwell, not you, not Helena Blavatsky. I didn't know anything about Helena Blavatsky. I don't even know who she is. I have no idea what the book is about. All I know is that I'm the one that gave him that name. I'm the one that came up with it. So you're lying when you say that Jordan Maxwell dreamt up that name for himself after he read Blavatsky's book, because it was me that did it, not him.
Hey, Jordan.
And so finally, Chris White has to again be found to be a liar, putting false, what do they call it in the Ten Commandments, bearing false witness against your neighbor. Well, he doesn't mind bearing false witness because he knows the Lord Jesus, washed in the blood of the Lamb, saved by the Holy Ghost, and he talks to the Lord Jesus himself personally, and the Lord said that Jordan Maxwell changed his name because he's a criminal. And so he put that out there, and since then, all the other airheads and dingbats and goofballs who don't know me, who have no idea about the subject at all, they pick up on it, and they are spreading the stuff. They are now spreading the rumors that I have changed my name because I'm a criminal, etc. So as far as I'm concerned, I have no respect for people who do that kind of thing, dream up something, you know, for your little 10 minutes in the light, in the sunlight, your little chance to be famous. And the best way you can do that is to badmouth or lie about somebody who is famous and therefore make yourself famous for about 10 minutes so you can sell some tapes and you know the Lord Jesus and blessed by the Lord. All of this is disgusting. All of this is nothing but lies and deception.
Absolutely, and that's so true. Hey, you know, one thing that's interesting, though, is the whole idea of them playing into prophecy. Funny how that all went down with your name. But can you tell the story real quick? And I can't remember the exact pieces of it, but if I remember, you were giving a speech somewhere, and a high-level Mason, who you'd seen at a couple of your speeches or something, came up to you after and said that they'd been watching you and that they allowed you to continue. Can you tell that story? Am I kind of getting it close?
Yeah, well, it and besides, it never happened. I mean, what he said would happen or could happen or possibly right. would happen never has happened. That was 30 years ago. So it was just I start off by saying that originally I was just told this by someone, but I didn't I'm not validating it. I was just told something. Somebody told me something. And right. so I just innocently say, well, you know, there was a day a long time ago, a guy came up to me and said this isn't that. And then immediately, you know, born again Christians, I say, there it is. See, Jordan Maxwell said this and that. He said that he was God, or he said he was a prophet. I didn't say that. I just said somebody told me this. And so, yeah, I had someone tell me a long time ago something, and I just thought it was interesting. And so I just mentioned it in passing. And, you know, it's too big a story to go into and too long. But bottom line is, as I was told by someone very high up in a society, that I was being watched. Well, I thought, well, of course I'm being watched. Oh, I'm all over the world. People are hearing me. I can imagine who's watching me. But I said I was being watched and that they appreciated what I was trying to do and that they would give me protection and help me and protect me if I needed it. And so they were protecting me because they realized what I was trying to do and they appreciated what I was doing. And so... Well, immediately people seized upon that and say, see, there it is. Jordan is working for the devil. People are you know, he's living a life of wealth and because of who he is and what he's doing, he's lying for the devil and the government's helping him. No, basically I just said that someone told me about 35 years ago that they appreciated what I was doing and trying to do, and that he belonged to a very powerful society, not a secret society as such, but just a society, and that they were appreciative of me and would try and protect me if I ever needed it.
Well, people
so
need-
I just said that in passing, you know. So immediately now that means that Jordan is working with the devil and he's got them, you know, he's got all this secret societies working for him. And I think to myself, you know, the only mistake I ever made was trusting my fellow man to tell them the truth. And this is why the secret societies do not tell the public anything. They don't tell. The government doesn't tell the public anything. Secret societies, the mafia doesn't tell. The CIA doesn't tell you anything. The NSA doesn't tell you anything. Nobody in power that has actual knowledge of anything for sure is going to tell you anything. Why? Because they know you can't handle it. Because when you tell somebody something, there's going to be lots of people hearing you, and everybody's going to get a different interpretation of what you said. It's like putting 40 people in a circle in a room and whispering from one person to the next what the first person said. When it comes to the last one, it's nothing like what the person said.
No.
So this is why the governments don't tell you. This is why the secret societies don't tell you anything. This is why powerful people don't tell you anything. It's because the people can't handle it.
Well, in my opinion, the people can't handle it because they've never been given the truth from the beginning. So,
of course. But right. but the other point I want to make is that people are so quick that if they hear something, whatever it is, all they know is that Jordan Maxwell's name was in it, and the word was the devil. So that right there means Jordan's working with the devil.
Yeah, those people don't even deserve a mention because they're everywhere, and they are the ones who are followers. They're the ones who cannot formulate their own thoughts. They cannot.
No, and they want to be important. They want to be important. They want people to talk with them and see them and to be somebody in this world. But there's nothing to them, so there's nothing they can do to be important. So the only thing they can do is find somebody who is doing something in the public eye, and criticize them. And now you've got at least something you can do to gain popularity. Right. Is to badmouth somebody in the public eye. You know, so
the one thing I've seen in a short period of time, though, is what that person does is they've cut themselves off from ever becoming anything. And I'm just saying on a very small scale, just noticing because I started with zero subscribers on YouTube, made a video, had five, made a video, had 10, 15. Well, I noticed when I got to a certain point that I started seeing these videos about me. And I thought going into it, okay, I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to explain things the way I see them, show my research, and everything will be great. Everyone will love me. That's what I thought. And then you quickly find out that, no, you're hated. The more and more subscribers you get, the more eyes are on you, the more that people make videos about you. But one thing I noticed about those who do step out and start saying things that aren't true is you can see them crumble after because they can – They've already, you know, people who are actually looking at you and who actually understand this guy's being honest, and well, they see somebody who tries to cut you down and they never pay attention to that person again. So that's the one thing I've seen, that thank goodness that that happens, that somebody who goes out just trying to cut off other people at the knees
without attacking or without addressing what you're saying.
Right. They're never going to become anything. And I think that's,
well, you know, that's true. That's true.
But one thing I wanted to say about, the guy that you said came up to you and said he was protecting you or watching you or that they were, to me, I look at that and I think it's so obvious. That's why the internet is out there. That's because people ask me all the time, if you're telling the truth, why would they allow you to speak on YouTube? And I say, well, because this allows them to keep track of what everybody knows.
Well, that, of course.
Right. When you're out speaking, it's the equivalent of the internet before the days of the internet. So you're out speaking at these venues, and they would send people to hear what is Jordan Maxwell saying. Because
it was harder for them to keep track, though.
It was harder for them to keep track. Now it's easier, right? People think the internet's made it so much harder for – no, it's made it easier because before you could have an assembly of people getting together talking about overthrowing the government or something like that.
And yeah, but the government wouldn't be there. They wouldn't know anything about it. But now you're telling them. Now you're telling them and telling the whole world.
Emails back and forth, and this is what date we'll meet, and this is who's in charge. And, yeah, you're not giving away your secrets. So that's to me why – they allow these things on YouTube. They're not going to, if they did cut me down, then that's them saying to everybody, we didn't like this guy for what he was saying. What they do, and this is what the elite are so damn good at that we can't catch up to, is they plan so far ahead. Because if they find out you know something, they know it's going to take time till it catches on. So let's say that Earth is flat. Let's say that they've been hiding this for years. And now it's starting to come out. Well, now is when they're formulating the plan of how to handle it, because they know it's going to take a lot of time for people to get all their ducks in a row, to get some truth,
to
get some evidence.
We're catching up. Because we see things change periodically.
They are changing things constantly.
When you bring up something, then those things are changing. But that's for the 15 years ahead when people look back and when they hear about it.
Correct.
Well, let me ask you something. How much I know we're coming to the end of the hour. I wanted to tell you something about that subject that I think is really important. Do we have a couple of minutes?
We have, 5 minutes probably. Go.
Okay. In the scriptures, in the New Testament, there's a story about Jesus where the Pontius Pilate, or the governor of Judea, the story goes in the Bible. It's in the New Testament story of Jesus, where he calls the governor calls everyone in the city together. And it's a special occasion, and he says to the town, all the people in town are there, and he says, according to your tradition, I, as the governor from Rome, I am your governor, I can release one prisoner each year. And so I have two prisoners here today. One is Jesus on my right, and one is Barabbas on my left. And he says, everyone knows Barabbas is a criminal, a liar and a thief and a criminal. And everybody knows Jesus has been healing people and helping people and doing all these wonderful miracles for people. And so the scripture says that the governor then says to the people of the city, so I can release one of these prisoners to you. Which one do you want, Barabbas or Jesus? And the scripture says, with one voice, the entire town, with one voice, said, give us Barabbas. Mm-hmm. And that is a very important symbolic fact of life, that when a family or a group of families or a city or a county or a state or any kind of an organization of people, when people are collected together, and they have an opportunity to listen to the truth and the light, to someone who's doing something for the human race, or to vote for a criminal that they know is a criminal, the people will always say, give us Barabbas. So the symbolic idea of that scripture is telling you when the people of this world are faced with liars, screwballs, traitors in government, criminals, or someone who's trying to teach you the truth in the light, they will always, people always say, give us Barabbas. We don't want the truth in the light. We're not interested in truth. We want the criminal. We want Obama. We want Obama and the Bushes. We know that they are criminals. Everybody, including God, knows they're criminals. But we want them. We will vote for them. Why? Because we don't want the truth.
Right.
And we want anybody telling us the real truth. We want the criminal.
Two great quotes.
So give us Barabbas.
One of them is, the only people mad at you for speaking the truth are those who are living a lie. I think that's a quote. And then George Orwell said, the further a society drifts from truth, the more it will hate those who speak it. And I don't think any truer things are.
No, that's what I was saying. That's it. And that's the story in the Bible, the war between truth and light and darkness. So that's always been the case.
We appreciate you so much for being on with us. I love having you every time. And I know everybody else does too. So awesome.
I appreciate being with you.
Yeah, and again, your site is Jordan Maxwell Show. Anything else you want to mention? We just have one minute, it looks like.
Yeah, if you want to really get in on my research, I've been over the years, just go on my Jordan Maxwell Show, and you will see that I have two brand new videos out there too, incidentally. I have two brand new videos right there on the home page. You can order them. And you can also join my research society, which I'm putting everything I do on the research society and keeping it private. So if you really want to know, then join and you will be able to see all of my work in the private venue. I want to thank you again for letting me on the air.